Welcome to the Fire Sprinkler Podcast with Chris and Logan. The Common Voices series of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast is brought to you by NFSA. For over a century, the National Fire Sprinkler Association has advocated to protect lives and property through the widespread acceptance of the fire sprinkler concept. The NFSA works closely with Common Voices, the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition, and several other organizations to advance its mission. Their diverse team of fire officials, engineers, attorneys, and tradespeople pulls from a range of different skills and experiences to effectively promote the fire sprinkler industry. Visit www.nfsa.org for more information. NFSA, the voice of the fire sprinkler industry. Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast. This episode is kind of an extension of the end of the last episode of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast, if you're listening in order, with NFSA and the Common Voices. Cher Grog came on and was helping Shane Ray with the Fox and Friends side-by-side sprinkler demonstration, and we touched on her story a little bit, but I wanted to get more into her story and what she's doing for the fire sprinkler industry. Hopefully, this story for the fitters, for the designers, for the engineers, for anybody involved in the fire protection industry, I hope that you take away from this conversation with her that this is the reason that we're in this industry. There are things we can do within this industry to protect property and to protect life. And Cher's kind of a Cher's story really kind of hits home and resonates with what we're doing in the industry as a whole. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank everybody for all the support. This will possibly, but maybe not, be the last episode of 2019. 2020 is right coming up on us here really, really quick. I want to thank everybody for the support over the past year. The podcast has blown up in 2019. 2020 is going to be another banger. So hopefully I can release a schedule soon with events I'm going to be at, things I'm going to be doing, products that I'm going to be releasing. And as always, hashtag Fire Sprinkler Podcast on all social media. I've been sharing things on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. If you're liking what you're seeing, like it, share it. Feel free to share anything. Recommend the Fire Sprinkler Podcast to anybody in the industry or anybody that you think will benefit from the things I'm getting. If you have any topics or discussions or suggestions for improving the Fire Sprinkler Podcast, fire me off a line. My direct email is chris@firesprinklerpodcast.com. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Cher Grog from The Common Voices. A special shout out and thank you to Vicky Pritchett from NFSA for organizing both this podcast as well as the last podcast, as well as kind of recommending the Common Voices series. So big thanks to Vicky Pritchett. Anybody that knows her knows she does a lot for the industry and a lot for fire protection as a whole. So big shout out to Vicky for everything you do. Now we're going to start the conversation with Cher Grog. Thanks. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast. This episode is the kickoff for the Common Voices series of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast. And today I have Cher Grog. Cher, how are you today?
I'm great, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
Not a problem at all. Cher, we had you on about, it was probably about a month ago now, back in November, in case anybody's listening kind of in order to the episodes of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast. We touched briefly on your story, but it was kind of, it was an interesting and painful story to understand and kind of wrap my head around with the 5 minutes you had to explain it. So right. I want to have you back on. I wanted to invite you back so you could tell your story a little bit more in depth. So why don't you start by giving an introduction for who you are and who you're with?
Okay. Well, my name is Cher Grog, and I'm with Common Voices. Common Voices is an advocacy group for fire safety and for fire sprinklers. We basically try to promote fire sprinklers in people's homes, as well as retrofitting commercial buildings that don't have them now, or bars, restaurants, any type of venue. We would love to be sprinklered. And my personal goal is to have people's homes, everyone's home, sprinklered for their own safety, because 9 out of 10 fire deaths occur in your home.
Residential fire sprinklers is kind of your end goal for the Common Voices advocacy. You want to push residential sprinkler.
Right, that's my personal goal. My personal goal. The goal overall is to push for sprinklers wherever we can have them installed, and to advise people of fire safety, to tell them not only would sprinklers help save their lives, but to definitely have working smoke detectors, check them all the time, check the batteries at least twice a year. Hopefully they got the 10-year batteries and they don't need to do that. But and also to have an escape plan that you practice with your children both daytime and at nighttime so that they know how to escape. And then basically after that, to close before you go to sleep, close the door. And if there is a fire and you're leaving it, close the door because that will help contain the fire. And then the home fire sprinklers, of course. But those are our messages.
So that's the main message. The main message is fire sprinkler, fire safety in general for the common voices.
Right.
So how long have you been involved with the common voices, and what got you involved with common voices?
Okay. Well, actually, my family had a tragedy on January 19th of 2015, and I would say that by August at the latest of 2015, I started working with Common Voices. I found them on the internet, and I basically searched the internet for people that could help me to have a voice that would be heard, other than just my voice, because I knew I didn't have a platform to stand on, and I didn't know enough about fire and fire safety at the time to do anything for anybody down the road. But I wanted to help people. I wanted to make people more aware of the dangers of fire than my family had been. Like I've told people, I wasn't there to save my family. I wanted to save another family if I possibly can. It will help me to just it just helps me. It's cathartic.
Little bit of
And so it helps me as well as I'm praying it helps save lives of other people and make a difference.
right. So if it's okay with you, would you like to tell the talk about the incident that happened that kind of got you interested in advocating fire protection and fire safety?
I would. Actually, I would love to tell you the story, although it's a very painful one. Basically, what happened with my family and our loss is that my brother and my sister-in-law had their grandchildren, their four beautiful grandchildren, over one night. Actually, they were having them over for Martin Luther King Day because they were off of school. So they had them on a Sunday and they had all sorts of fun things planned. They went to places, some places where I don't know, they went to Kmart, Walmart, and all sorts of places, just normal places to find outfits for them to wear, little princess outfits and things like that for because there were three girls and one boy. And he needed an outfit too, of course. But they did that. Then they went to medieval times all dressed up and had the time of their lives. They really had a great time that night. We saw pictures of them from friends of ours that were there and it so we know that they had a wonderful time that night. And then they went home to my brother's house and everyone had a sleepover because they were going to go to the movies the next day and make that a special grandparent children day too. But the kids had never slept over at Don and Sandy's on their own. Their parents were to sleep over, or not all four of them even ever slept over. So it was the first time they had slept over at my brother and sister-in-law's, and that was really very special for them. So it was a lovely night anyway, planned. And what happened was in the middle of the night, they had a Christmas tree that was still in their home on January 19th. And it had dried out. It didn't look dried out. It looked beautiful. I had seen it 9 days before. And what happened was there was an electrical fire, an electrical circuit arced, and it caught the tree on fire in the middle of the night. And they were all sleeping in separate bedrooms. And what happened was the tree caught fire. The smoke detectors went off at 3:28, almost simultaneously. They had them on every floor, and of course in the hallways and outside the bedrooms. But they at 3:31, all I these are the facts that I know. At 3:31, the neighbor next door looked over at the house, which was very far away, but she could see an orange glow in her window. And when she looked there, she could see flames shooting through the roof and out the windows. It was like a flame ball. Yeah, it was a torch in 3 minutes. So what I believe happened, based upon where they found my brother, my sister-in-law, and the children after days of searching. The whole house had crumbled apart. It was basically down to absolutely, there was nothing left. But and so they had all fallen through to the basement. But they could tell from their positions that my brother was in the room with the tree, potentially fighting the fire. My sister-in-law made it up to the first bedroom at the top of the stairs to get the first two children, but she collapsed right as she got inside the door. The children were all found in their bedrooms. So we're praying that they were still asleep and didn't wake up because smoke detectors, 70% of children don't even hear them, which is crazy because they're really for children and families to be warned. So we need to work on that somehow. But the whole thing was that we know now that the kids were in their rooms. Don and Sandy were totally aware of the fire. And actually, Don had even opened the garage doors so that Sandy could run the kids down the hall away from the fire and out through the garage, down a spiral staircase at the other end of the house and out through the garage. So that's how much I know he had a plan in place. But they couldn't execute their plan because a flashover occurred when the tree was ignited, and the room was one of those open construction rooms. So there was a lot of oxygen and air, and there was fuel in the draperies and some of the furniture that was there. And so it went in under 3 minutes. And my message to people is that fire is fast. It's much faster. I want the public to know this because my family did not know. We thought that you still had like 17 minutes or so to escape a fire, which is what we had when I was born in the 50s. Now it is under 3 minutes that your room can go into flashover and the whole room basically implodes and everything catches fire, including the smoke. Everything is on fire. So no one can survive that. Between the toxins from the smoke, which is fire, everything that I imagine it to be, it is just not survivable. And my brother and sister-in-law were really not prepared for that. So they did not have fire sprinklers in their home, although they had state-of-the-art technology in every other way.
And they had the smoke detectors, which is obviously a warning system. It's more of a reactive system as opposed to a proactive system that sprinklers is. Sprinklers are going to actually, detect the fire and begin to suppress the fire and give you more time to get out of the home alive. Was it a new, so they had built this home themselves. How old was the home?
The home was built in 2005, which actually, I believe it was maybe finished in 2006. Anyway, the point was, this happened in 2015, so it was approximately 10 years old, the home. But it was built before it was mandated in Maryland for homes to have fire sprinklers. Now it's mandated in Maryland, California, and Washington, D.C. that homes do have fire sprinklers. New homes are built with fire sprinklers. But it wasn't at the time that they built their home, unfortunately.
Maryland, California
Maryland, California, and Washington, D.C.
are all mandatory sprinkler in all new residential structures.
Right. Oh, and that's kind of crazy because it's actually recommended in the building codes nationally. It's recommend. I mean, it's basically a standard in the building code that you should have fire sprinklers in your home, but different municipalities and states feel differently about it. There's a lot of back push from builders and things who think it would make houses too expensive for people to live in, but that's really also a fallacy.
It really is. I mean, if you look at the overall cost of building some of these houses, and there's some amazing architecture that that has kind of evolved over the past 30 to 40 years. Unfortunately, it's also led to fire traps for people building into these large rooms. These open concept homes are beautiful to walk into and see from one end of the house to the other. But unfortunately, it's just a tunnel for the fire to grow to. And you spoke to the Christmas tree was essentially the origin of the fire.
Right.
You ever want to see how fast and how important it is to keep your Christmas tree watered? Go onto YouTube and just search Christmas tree fire and watch. And you can see the timer in the corner. Some
Right.
a little bit sped up to about 1.5 seconds, but you still see the actual time clock on how fast that fire grows. And it's the entire, for a dry Christmas tree, it takes maybe 15 seconds to be totally involved in fire, which
You're right. I mean, it'll be completely engulfed within 30 seconds. And even a Christmas tree that's not incredibly dry will it be engulfed in 30 seconds. Actually, they did some tests after my brother's tragedy, and they got three trees, and they did this at NIST headquarters, or I wasn't invited, so I'm not sure exactly where it was taking place, but everybody was there that was in the fire industry that mattered to know this kind of thing. And that the ATF conducted it because it was in their investigation. And they burned these three trees after aging them for 60 days, like my brothers had been aged. And they actually bought them from the same farm. So two of them were watered like occasionally, and one was watered like almost intravenously, like every day. The one that was watered every day, this is why it's very important to me to get this information out to people. The one that was watered every day took 6 minutes to ignite and burn to peak velocity in another 30 seconds, but it left off a lot less heat, a lot less. I can't remember the kilowatts exactly, but it was a lot less heat. And it even the fact that it didn't ignite in 6 minutes means that my brother and his family could possibly have gotten away even without the fire sprinklers.
Absolutely.
If they had had just 6 minutes of time to get out. But, you know, they had under three, of course. And, you know, but the other two, which were watered like every 3 days or so, they actually were consumed within 30 seconds, completely consumed, and went into flashover. Yeah, so
the one that was watered every 3 days was still 30 seconds. So it doesn't take long for those trees to dry up.
No, it does not. It definitely does not. And even if your tree doesn't look like it's dry, you know, like I had said, I was at Don and Sandy's on the 10th of January and I saw their tree and I said to my sister-in-law, you know, Sandy, the tree looks beautiful. Why do you still have it up now? You don't usually have it up so late. And she said, oh, Don wanted it up a little later because he really wasn't able to enjoy it over the holidays. He was working too long and too hard. So we wanted to have a little extra time. So we had a little discussion and she said, yeah, I think that probably I'm going to get I'll call tomorrow and I'll get the decorators to come and take it down because they couldn't take it down themselves. It was a 16-foot humongous tree. It was 16 feet. It was a big tree. Really, the biggest one they could find. We went out as a family and picked out the tree every year. It was a tradition of ours. We did it the Friday after Thanksgiving. That's how much we all loved these trees, and we were all a part of it. And that's why it was such a major tragedy to all of us. Not just the fact that they were gone, but the fact that this tree, that it's been a symbol of our family unity for all those years, and our family tradition had turned against us. Mm-hmm. And actually destroyed my family, destroyed my brother and my sister-in-law and, you know, and their children. And by destroying them, my brother's children basically lost their parents and their children on the same day.
Tragedy happened in January of 2015. You linked up
right.
Voices in August.
Yeah, in August. And you know what, though? I'm sorry. I forgot to tell you that the point of the story there was that Sandy did call the decorators the next day and they were leaving for vacation. And she said, okay, well, I don't want to hire any new people. You know, of course, I'll wait for you. And she waited for them and they were supposed to come on the afternoon of the 19th to take down the tree. And the fire actually occurred in the wee hours of the morning on the 19th. So don't wait to take your tree down is my message. Don't wait for anybody to come back and take it down, hire some new people, or take it down yourself. Whatever you have to do, do it right after the holidays. Do not leave your tree in your home any longer than New Year's Day.
Do you have any other tree? I mean, it's the season for Christmas trees now. It's the 18th right now. We're 6 days away from Christmas Eve. People have had their live trees in their home for probably, you know, about a month now. You get used to it. You forget to water it every day. what can we do to kind of increase Christmas tree safety, fire safety in general around the holidays?
Right. Well, Common Voices have been really helping me a great deal on this mission, because my first mission was not about fire sprinklers. I really didn't know enough about fire sprinklers to know that they were going to become a part of my mission. But I did know that Christmas trees weren't as safe as I had once thought they were, and that you needed to water them every day, especially once we got the test results back. So I worked on a campaign with Common Voices, who basically I had started with them. I actually came to them from searching the internet at night, because I would wake up at 3 thinking I could save my family and realizing that I couldn't, and not able to get back to sleep then, because it was like Groundhog Day. Every night I'd wake up the same situation, the same story. I couldn't save them. So I went online, and that's when I found Common Voices, and I found out all the things they did. And what they did was they helped me to make a public service announcement with regard to what happened to my family. And they also helped me now with a Christmas tree campaign that I have, that basically there's a flyer that we put out, and we're trying to get it distributed through the fire departments nationally, to bring to local tree stands so that people have information on how to take care of your tree. And the three critical points, although there are many points on that flyer, are to, you know, get a fresh tree, obviously, but to water your tree every day. Not only to turn the lights off, but to unplug it at night so that there's no circuits going through, no electrical activity, whatever, not a chance of it. And to remove your tree immediately after the holidays. Those are our three most important messages, because those could save your life. No. There are some other things too, like don't keep it near any heat source, it'll dry it off out, and all those things as well. But, you know, they're helping me get this flyer out, and they've also helped me. We were on Fox and Friends, where we could show how fast a Christmas tree went up. We were able to do a demonstration, show it with and without sprinklers, and talk to them about how fast a Christmas tree can burn and how to take care of it.
So the message, part of the message there that you touched on there, just in case anybody missed it, there was a lot of good information there, but not only turn off your lights, but completely unplug them from the wall, just to remove any source of power, because something can happen in the middle of the night if they're unplugged. If they're just turned off.
Right, exactly. You know, we weren't certain whether or not the lights were on in the house or off. The fire department didn't know for sure. They just knew that there was electrical activity. Unfortunately, Sandy generally left lights on 24/7, because she didn't know the difference. She didn't know you even needed to unplug them at night. And this is a well-educated woman. So she just thought it was magical to keep them on and that it looked safe, and she had wired them safely and everything was fine. But that is not, in fact, true. You need to turn them off at night, and then you need to unplug them. So that way you don't have any possibility that there will be a fire, because, like I said, the fire departments told me that they could not tell for sure whether the lights were on or off.
It's an incredible story. We talked about it a little bit before when you were telling me the story before we went on the air. The week after, why don't you touch a little bit about the week after? The week after it actually happened, it was the fire was so hot, so severe. Access wasn't granted to the home for about a week until you guys were able.
Yeah. Well, what happened was that access to the home, no firefighters or anyone could get in for actually 2 days following the fire, because there was still smoldering for days. It was finally declared safe on the third day by the afternoon. And they sent people in to try and recover bodies. At that point, they knew it was just a recovery mission. It was not a safety mission. And so they went in looking for the bodies. And what happened was my family, we couldn't go on. Nobody was allowed on the premises for over a week until they found all of the bodies and then made the property safe for just people to walk about. And it was fenced off to anybody but us after that, ever after that, to be honest with you, until finally now it's somebody else's property and they're building on it, which is nice because they're really respecting the property and our family. But anyway, so nobody could come in. The house was smoldering and we were actually briefed every night by the fire department at 4 p.m. We would all, as a family, we would all go to the fire department, sit down around a big table, big conference table, and Chief Howarth would tell us what had happened during that day, if they had found any bodies. The first day they found a body, the first day that they found a body, they said we did find a body today. My hopes all dropped because I had still been trying to delude myself that they weren't there. They would have been supposed to be in Ocean City that weekend, but of course they weren't there either. So in any case, we decided as a family that we did not want to know who they found every day because it was cold and rainy and snowy and the conditions were horrible outside. And it was unfathomable to think that they had all been consumed by a fire, but to think that their bodies were still out there and not safely somewhere and they're still exposed to the elements. And it just, weird things go through your mind anyway. You're not thinking rationally when you're in grief. I think we were all in shock, to be honest with you, for probably at least a month, minimally. And what was my point, though? But point was basically that, you know, we couldn't go in. We found out finally, it was a week when we found out that everybody had been finally discovered. And then they brought us in and told us where they had been discovered, because they knew that that was going to be something that would impact all of us as well, especially me, since my brother was found right by the tree. So in any case, they would brief us and then it would be on the news publicly within half an hour of our briefing, which is why they brought us in when they did, because they didn't want us to hear it on the news instead of through them. But, it was just a torturous experience for our family, to be torn apart for that long and in like mourning and just active mourning. It's like when you lose somebody and you know something terrible has happened to them, but you don't, you haven't recovered a body and you're just unsure. It's just a very unstable feeling and you want to at least put it to rest, to put yourself at peace in any small way.
Right. I can't imagine the time, the waiting, the hoping and dreaming that, you know, while you're standing and waiting for a story, the family's going to pull into the parking lot behind you and be like, "What? Oh, what happened to my house when they were gone?" I'm sure that's what you guys were thinking on a daily basis until the inevitable, the terrible news comes down. I hope, in some regards, you're hearing stories of the advocacy group promoting sprinklers and actually hearing the sprinkler saves. I hope is somewhat of a not so much a retribution, because there's nothing that's going to make you feel any better about this, but
right,
you know, for anybody involved in the fire protection industry, anybody that's is, you know, passionate about the fire protection industry, perhaps myself, thousands of other people out there, you get that kind of warm feeling when you hear the sprinkler activations, and they happen daily.
Right. It's true.
So, I mean, you guys have been doing good things. You've got mandatory sprinklers now in residential dwellings and in multiple states, municipalities, right, to become more educated. Thank you from the, not only the fire protection industry, but as a, you know, somebody who's hoping to be on fire department here in less than a year. Thank you for everything you do to kind of make the world a safer place in fire protection.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, if I could get the message out to save one person, it would certainly, you know, I'll never know. I'll never know if my message got through to anybody, and that's fine. And that's wonderful, because I'd rather not know. It means that maybe it did. So, I would want to recommend to anybody that goes through a tragedy that to get active and to try to fight against that tragedy in another family will help you through your grief, because it helps you channel that negative energy into something more positive. And I am also trying to, you know, talk to people about advocacy and how it can really help them through grief because my family actually, the kids who lost their children, well, they're not kids, they're grown adults, but they told me that they're all still dwelling in their grief and I'm the only one that's made anything positive out of this. And it really has given me, it gave me a lot of help through the grief in the very beginning, because the fire department took me on as family, Common Voices took me on as family, everyone in Common Voices has lost a loved one. So I could talk to any of them about what had happened to me and they understood. It was a really good way to get yourself networked in with a group of people that understand and that want to help people as much as you do.
Well, if you have any questions, if my story's ever affected anybody, I can honestly say it's affected me. When I talked to you about a month ago, I immediately got off the phone. I went and spoke with my wife. I talked to my family and I was like, I know I'm in the right, you know, I'm very passionate about the industry. I've been for, you know, since I've been a kid, essentially, I've been involved in the fire protection industry, being from a family business and, you know, talking kind of really pushes me and hopefully pushes the people that listen to say, this is why we do what we do. This is why we're in this industry. It's not pipe and fittings. You know, it's not sprinklers, pipe fittings, and a paycheck. It can and will save lives, save property, and it will make a difference.
Totally. I mean, I am so thankful for people that are installing sprinklers every day. It's a fight for them. It's a fight to get the business. It's just not an easy industry to be in, especially if you're trying to sell the product to commercial is one thing, but to homes, it's a tough battle. And I'm happy that, you know, that people are willing to fight it and really to try and get sprinklers in everywhere they possibly can.
If anybody wants more information on the Common Voices Advocacy Group, fireadvocates.com. They're on, they have a very active Twitter page. Cher, is there anything else you want to let anybody else know before we wrap this up?
No, I just hope that if anybody needs anything, that they will contact Common Voices. Actually, it's fireadvocates.org, not .com, it's .org. But if they would reach out to us through that, any of us would be interested in coming and advocating at any time, any place they need a speaker, where it will make a difference that it's someone that's unbiased and not from the industry.
Absolutely. And if there's anything the Fire Sprinkler Podcast can do for the Common Voices, feel free to let me know.
Okay.
Cher, I want to thank you for coming on again and sharing your story. And thanks for kicking off the Common Voices series of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast.
Thank you, Chris. It was really a pleasure talking to you. And I appreciate the opportunity to get my story out there.
Thank you. Hey guys, I wanted to come on and just make sure that the right website was clear. It is fireadvocates.org. I know I said fireadvocates.com and then she corrected me, but I just want to make sure it's very clear. If you're looking for more information, go to www.fireadvocates.org. Thanks for tuning in and we'll see you on the next one.